Hello, folks, and welcome to this, another episode of Socratic Citizen. I'm Socrates the Younger, and it is January 12th, the year of our Lord, 2021. So yesterday we talked about a civil war, because that's what everybody seemed to be talking about, and that seemed to be what was on everybody's minds, but I am not inclined towards conspiracism. I am not inclined towards catastrophism. I know I've heard commentators like Tim Pool say that he has a normalcy bias, when I think it's pretty clear that people like him do not have a normalcy bias. Indeed, they have a catastrophe bias, because everything is the end of the world, and oh my God, things are only ever going to get worse. But I am not so inclined. I rather am actually probably biased towards an optimistic viewpoint, which I think, I mean, you know, this is self-appraisal, so take it for what it's worth, I think is actually useful in this current moment. Because the tendency right now is for everybody to think that this is a major catastrophe, and not the sort of catastrophe that came after, for example, September 11th, 2001, when everybody was on the same side, at least with the notable exception of a number of Muslim Americans who were on the kind of receiving end of all that unity. And as we're aware, that can be an unpleasant situation which to find oneself. So I want to talk a little bit today about the various different factions in America and the various ways in which they're kind of asserting themselves and saying, I'm here, pay attention to me, I demand to be listened to, which is really what everyone wants in the end, right? We all just want someone to listen to us and tell us that we're not crazy. And of course, to control the levers of power and to dictate the way in which the culture will manifest itself in general. But I think that there is some hope here. I think that there is the fact that it's not all one-sided can put to rest a lot of the kind of conservative whimpering that there's a massive assault on conservatives in general, because the conservative movement is not without tools, it's not without weapons, it's not without cultural influence. After all, 74 million people voted for Donald Trump. Those people have jobs, and they have fingers that for typing on keyboards, and they have mouths. They can indeed start their own Twitters. I have, in fact, been inspired by this whole Parler debacle, because a lot of people said, oh, build your own Twitter, they said. Go make your own platform, they said. And then, of course, Amazon Web Services shut down Parler, which we will talk about a little more here in a moment, but I immediately went, oh my God, this is awesome, because what this moment has done is it has really shown people the way in which economic independence is a necessary prerequisite for political freedom. Like, I like to talk about the decentralists. I very often highlight Herbert Agar's book, or Agar, I don't know how to say it, because it's from 1936 and he's not around anymore to correct me, and nobody else is really talking about this book, but it's called Who Owns America? A New Declaration of Independence. And the independence they were declaring, these columnists and authors and so on and so forth, in this book, including Hilaire Belloc, who's an interesting cat, you should look him up if you get a chance, they argued not for independence from England or from any colonial or monarchical or government power. What they declared independence from was economic dependence on giant corporations, large structures of any kind. And I think that we need to relearn that lesson today. Basically, these decentralists took a little bit from Marxism insofar as they said the means of production should be distributed among the people. But that doesn't mean collective ownership. Insofar as I am a member of the proletariat, the authoritarian government governs on behalf of the proletariat, and therefore I'm really the one in charge of all the businesses, when actually we know it's the government who makes everything, their decisions as they see fit, regardless of what I want, based on Marxist theory. Instead, the decentralists argued that property should be widely distributed, that widespread private property ownership was the best way to guarantee political freedom. And I'm inclined to agree. I'm inclined to think that political freedom is, or has as a necessary component to it, economic independence. And what that means is that you either have to use a web services or you have to use servers owned by people who agree with you politically, okay, or you have to own them yourself. And I've basically described Parler's and Gab's business models, respectively. Gab has been doing this for years, and a long time ago, they started building their own servers so that they could not be kicked off of anything. Parler is just now figuring this out because Parler is something of a Johnny-come-lately to the whole alternative media platform game. So it's going to take them some time to catch up. They may actually never catch up. We'll see what happens. But either way, what's really happening here is people are realizing the extent to which these giant corporations have an outsized amount of control on discourse in general, on dialogue in this country, the degree to which their economic dominance translates into political dominance. And I would not be surprised to see companies like Parler turning into web services companies. Maybe not Parler specifically. Their leadership team has not so far evinced a great degree of alacrity, celerity, and or facility with the tools of internet power. So we'll see what happens with them. I have only the highest hopes for them because I do believe in freedom of expression, even for people who do not agree with me. But, you know, of course, it's going to take some time. It may not be Parler specifically. It may be other people. But eventually, I think you will start to see hosting companies, security companies, so on and so forth, that are more conservative or run by conservatives. And what this means is a breaking, not necessarily of big tech's economic monopoly, because these sites may continue to cater solely to conservatives who don't feel comfortable on mainstream social media platforms. The cat video and grandma checking up on her grandchildren demographic may never feel the need to leave Facebook or Twitter. But what you may start to see is a break on the political stranglehold that these companies have heretofore possessed. So once, before we get into all the various different sides and what I'm calling the three Americas, or what I'm borrowing from Axios calling the three Americas, let's talk a little bit about the comments. So we have one particularly good comment that I'd like to highlight here. This is from the YouTube channel. So just remember, guys, you can, if you so desire, go see our show archive on YouTube, where you can leave comments on all of our previous shows. We were doing clips for a while, but I've gotten rather busier and I have not been able to do them lately. We will get back to that, however, because I was posting my clips on Gab, and then, you know, Gab became super cool all of a sudden. It's like the hip new thing that all the revolutionaries are doing. And now, you know, me and my four followers have a very weak claim to be an OG Gab user. Hello, Shilmar. Welcome back to the show. I did take a look at Dan Carlin. I listened to about 52 minutes of his most recent Common Sense podcast episode. I forget what it's called. Something about a ship in an iceberg, the Titanic steering into the iceberg or something. I'm actually a fan. I like the guy. I have to say, I think maybe he takes a little too seriously his what he calls his Jeffersonianism. He was talking about Thomas Jefferson showing up at BLM rallies if he was alive today, which I don't think is outside the realm of reality. He's probably got a point there about Thomas Jefferson being a relatively progressive fellow. But at the same time, I think that his faith in the American system as it was originally designed might be a little bit misplaced. The only other issue I had with him was his last episode, as far as I could tell, at least on Spotify, was from September, which was a while ago. And so a lot of what he was saying, while interesting and useful, was kind of out of date. So I don't know if maybe he's more conscientious about posting on some other medium, but let me know. So I experienced Dan Carlin as promised, and I very much enjoyed him. Also, he's got a cool voice. He sounds cool. He's got that. He almost sounds like an NPR guy, but more dramatic. Like, there's just this sense of, like, the lights have gone down and the curtain is opening and great things are coming. Now, his brain has been frazzled by the whole Trump phenomenon. Wow, my brain was a little frazzled by it, too. And I guess I responded by creating episodes more frantically and having 27 different things to talk about in every episode. But anyway, so I wanted to look at this comment. This is from yesterday. Shelmar says, I don't agree with him on literally anything, but have a soft spot for him. I can definitely understand that. He is the kind of guy who invites disagreement without dissension, who invites conversation without contention or contempt. I can disagree with him, but I don't dislike him. So, anyway, so Eric Barnard is one of our most conscientious commenters, always writes these lengthy comments, and he writes from, this is from yesterday's episode, the word conservative needs to be stripped from these articles. The proper word is liar. Donald Trump, Lynn Wood, Sidney Powell, Mike Flynn, Rudy Giuliani, Jim Jordan, Devin Nunes, Matt Gaetz, Madison Cawthorn, Marjorie Greene are liars. They've lied repeatedly and furiously. This isn't about conservatives being silenced. That's their victim card. That's their talking point. This is about liars who just happen to be Republicans or quote-unquote conservatives who repeatedly lied over and over and over. If you lied to people and they hurt someone or damage property, you bear a responsibility. They lied and now five people are now dead. Or they lied and five people are now dead. And their punishment is losing social media accounts and platforms. All right. Well, I have to say, I sense a little bit of anger here from you, Eric. I don't know. This doesn't sound like your normal self. Normally, you're much more circumspect in your descriptions of political things that are going on, but you have quite a long list here. Some of these people I understand. Trump, I know, has been accused of being a liar all the time. Lynn Wood thinks that Jeffrey Epstein is alive, so I think he may have lost touch with reality completely. Sidney Powell is another one of those who somehow thought, like, a week ago that there was still a chance of Trump actually being the president on January 21st, 2021. Mike Flynn has also been kicked off of Twitter. He was calling for martial law. Rudy Giuliani, another guy who I think may have lost touch with reality a while ago. But these guys, I don't know about these fellas here. Jim Jordan, Devin Nunes, Matt Gaetz, and Madison Cawthorn. Madison Cawthorn, who is now, I think, the youngest House of Representative or representative in the House from North or South Carolina, something like that. But he struck me as a kind of like anodyne, kind of toothless, just very nice, let's bring everyone together and let's all be nice to each other kind of guy. That was like his whole pitch. And then Marjorie Greene, well, she is a QAnon supporter, as far as I know. She believes the QAnon stuff. So I don't really know what to say about QAnon, frankly. I don't know of any historical context for it. Shelmar, you'll appreciate that. I really have no idea what's going on with the QAnon thing. I don't know where it came from. I don't know how it got so much traction. I am at a loss. My brain is frazzled by QAnon, which is why we almost never talk about it on this show. Because generally, when someone comes along who's got a position or is advocating for something, even if they do seem evil or out of touch with reality, I can at least understand where they're coming from. I can at least say, all right, if I believed to be true all the things that these people believe to be true, I might be acting the way they are acting. But I just can't understand how someone can come to believe that the things posited by QAnon are true. It sounds like a parody of a conspiracy theory, not a real conspiracy theory. So I don't know about this word liar. Sometimes I feel like they're liars who are like grifting. Frankly, I kind of thought that's what Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley were doing. I got the sense they didn't really believe that Trump won the election, but they wanted credit for thinking that Trump won the election. So they acted like they thought Trump won the election, and they were trying to just like gin up Trump supporters so that one of them could run for president in 2024. But I think Trump and Lynn Wood and Sidney Powell and Mike Flynn and Rudy Giuliani and maybe more of these other people genuinely believe that Trump won the election. Shale Mar says QAnon started with Pizzagate. It blew up after Trump won. It started on 4chan among the alt-right, then migrated to Facebook and Twitter. I thought it was a joke at first and slowly watched it grow since 2018-ish. I thought it was a joke at first, too. I was like, come on, man, be realistic. The idea that that is a real conspiracy theory sounds itself like a conspiracy theory. But no, apparently it's real. And I am familiar with its origins. Like, I understand, maybe I shouldn't say I don't know how it became a big deal. I don't understand why it became a big deal. Because I just cannot wrap my head around how someone could actually believe the things that it says. Like, I remember watching Alex Jones a long time ago, back when he was getting kicked off of everything. Whenever somebody gets kicked off of everything, I have to go investigate them and say, what is this person talking about that's getting them kicked off of everything? And Alex Jones even didn't seem this crazy. Like, he talks about some really weird stuff, like cell phone towers being used to control the weather. Nothing else comes to mind at the moment. You guys are familiar with Alex Jones. But then I saw this and I'm like, this is like a parody of an Alex Jones thing. I don't know if Alex Jones is now doing the QAnon thing. I did, however, hear a story yesterday that Alex Jones was at the DC protests, not the riots. He was at the protests. Some of the protesters became rioters by breaking into the Capitol. Alex Jones, from the story I heard, was standing on the sidelines yelling, no, 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 guys, don't do this. Don't break into the Capitol. So as the person I heard the story from said, you know, if Alex Jones is the voice of reason, maybe you should, like, check your premises because you've lapsed into complete lunacy at that point. So Eric says they've lied repeatedly and furiously. Okay, they've either lied or my contention is in the case of the election, because 40% of the American electorate believes the election was rigged, stolen, or at least fishy. And I mean, I've seen all kinds of stuff where I'm like, in outside of any context, I look at that and go, that doesn't look good. I'm not willing to like burn down America over it, but it doesn't look good. It doesn't look above board. Some of the, and I don't mean the videos of, oh my God, stunning evidence from the Epoch Times. I meant some of the statistical stuff, Biden winning none of the bellwether counties. He didn't win Ohio. He didn't win Florida. Normally these are prerequisites for winning the president, not prerequisites, but they are all like the president always wins these things. Like, it's just kind of weird, but it's not enough to burn the country down over. It's not enough to stop the election over. It's enough to say, I would not oppose some investigation, but we talked about that yesterday. So it seems like Eric's real point here is that this is not about conservatives being silenced. That's their victim card. That's their talking point. This is about liars. But I'm not sure what he means when to say this is about liars. Like liars, I guess, playing the victim, pretending to be victims in order to get something. I don't know. I'm going to close with this because I've now spent 20 minutes talking and we haven't done any articles yet. So they lied and 5 people are now dead. Okay, so you're drawing a direct correlation or direct causative connection between these people up here said the election is stolen and now you caused these 5 people to be dead. If you lied to people and they hurt someone or damage property, then you bear a responsibility. I don't know about this. I don't know that that's true. Maybe you bear some like indirect responsibility, but because of the fact, Eric, that you say that their punishment is losing social media accounts and platforms, I think you mean like direct responsibility. Like, I don't know that you really get punished for indirect responsibility, right? If I'm speeding and therefore I don't see the light change, and so I hit grandma, I'm directly responsible. My irresponsibility directly caused the problem. But if I'm indirectly responsible, if I call you and say, you better get here in 5 minutes or you're fired, and therefore you speed and hit grandma, am I now responsible for grandma's death? Do I deserve to be punished? I don't think so. But anyway, that's enough of that. Thank you, Eric, for your comments. They are always interesting, and they always at least prompt some discussion. So I said we were going to talk about the three Americas, the way America is kind of splitting up into various factions, and the ways in which these factions are interacting with each other, and as I promised, a little bit of optimism in today's episode. Fat Daddy Sambo says, Trump hates grandmothers. Can we still grandmother? Fat Daddy Sambo, based on your name, I'm assuming you are not a grandmother, but you appear to be using the word grandmother as a verb. So I'm not sure what, can we still say grandmother? I have no idea what that is supposed to mean. Are you okay? If you need help, just type 911, all right? And we will call the mayor of D.C. or something. Shilmar said the argument I've heard is by lying about the legitimacy of the election, even after using avenues available to contest it, Trump legitimized an attempt to overturn the fake election by the people. Right. So as far as I can tell, I would 95% agree with that characterization. But that still, to my way of thinking, constitutes indirect responsibility. So that's me saying, the election was stolen, this is unfair, and then I go, you know, we need to do something about this, let's go storm the Capitol, right? Trump didn't come up with the idea of storming the Capitol, so he doesn't bear the direct responsibility, right? He bears indirect responsibility for ginning up his supporters, for getting everybody excited, for making everybody think that the system is rigged. But, you know, for example, I've heard this said a lot, and I don't know about this, but somebody said that the guy who shot Steve Scalise, the congressman, said he was motivated by Bernie Sanders. You say, well, Bernie Sanders isn't really responsible for that. We can't lay that at the feet of Bernie Sanders. And I'm inclined to agree with that. And so they say, okay, as a result, Trump's saying the election is stolen, he bears no responsibility. I say maybe he bears indirect responsibility because he's saying we're in like an emergency situation. This has never happened before. We got to do something about it, you know? So I'm going with indirect responsibility for Trump when it comes to the election, not direct responsibility. He did not directly say, let's go burn down the Capitol or let's go sack the Capitol and lynch the vice president. Like the guy from The Atlantic said. Fat Daddy Sambo said, House vote to remove gender paternal labels. Well, that doesn't sound like Trump hating grandmothers. That sounds like Nancy Pelosi hating grandmothers. Maybe she's gotten tired of being referred to as Mama Bear. She wants to be referred to as parent animal, which to my way of thinking is a step in the wrong direction. But, you know, to each their own. So anyway, this is a little off kilter, and I like doing stories like this. So this is halfway between my normal attempt to do some interesting and funny stories at the beginning and then move into the serious, heavy stuff and what we've been doing the past couple days, which is just 120% heavy, heavy stuff. So this is from Ad Age, which I don't normally read, but I had to find out more about this story because I found it in the depths of the right-wing angry land. So I had to go confirm it. So confirming it, I found Ad Age, which is not part of right-wing crazy land, and therefore it can be more or less believed. So OkCupid, the online dating site, goes from DTF to overt politics in their first global campaign. So the dating site OkCupid is leaning heavily into the political themes touched on in its previous campaign, the provocative and award-winning DTF. As 2020 will likely be dominated by talk of polling, political positions, and deeply held values. Yeah, this is from a while ago. So too will ask yourself. DTF, Fat Daddy Sambo, since I guess you're from an older generation, stands for down to fuck. So in other words, someone who is open to sexual exploration with a partner. Now, OKCupid's ad campaign would have DTF, and then they would take it and say, oh, it's, and have it stand for all kinds of different stuff. Like activities that couples could do together. I don't remember the specifics. I don't really pay attention to this kind of stuff. I don't use online dating personally. Haven't been on OKCupid, at least as a user. I mean, I've seen this, but that's about it. So they would have it stand for other stuff. The idea being to kind of hit people on an emotional level with, look, online dating is not just for hookups. Like, you can meet a soulmate on OKCupid. However, new developments suggest that that soulmate had better have voted at least for Biden, if not in the primaries for Bernie or Warren. So, breaking today, it includes a series of out-of-home placements, and this is from a while, this is from like months ago. It includes a series of out-of-home placements running first in New York City. They assure viewers that it's okay to choose a date or maybe even a partner for life based on their progressive opinions about abortion, gender identity, or activism. The campaign features messages like, it's okay to only date someone who's pro-choice. And then my favorite, it's okay to choose Mr. Right based on how far left he leans. And there we have a picture of a subway car featuring some of these OKCupid ads. And here we have another one. It's okay to not date a man who won't vote for a woman. I don't understand why they're all apparently pitched to women, but whatever. Shomar says, who cares? We're going to tie this in, all right? Because remember, the theme of the episode here is the three Americas, and these three Americas are divided by culture as well as politics. So we've got that, right? And in fact, I want to go from here directly to the article that I stole the Three America thing from, which is Axios. This says insurrection and misinformation is tearing the country into three Americas. So the United States, torn apart by insurrection and mass misinformation, is witnessing a political and social realignment unfold in real time. We're splitting into three Americas. And this is why I love Axios. Look at the way this article's set up. Why it matters, the existential question, and then they just break it up. It's just, this is a great site. And they're mainstream. They're not like crazy lunacy site. So very nice. I feel perfectly comfortable using information I find here for everyone. So America, in its modern foundational components, is breaking into blue America, red America, and Trump America, all with distinct politics, social networks, and media channels. The existential question for Republicans, and perhaps for America, is whether Trump America, animated by the likes of Newsmax, Rush Limbaugh, Tucker Carlson, and Parler, or whatever replaces it, eclipses the traditional red America in power in the coming years. Now, I would like to highlight that Tucker Carlson has featured both left-wing progressive YouTuber slash comedian Jimmy Dore and notable progressive journalist and breaker of the Ed Snowden story, Glenn Greenwald, to the point that both Greenwald and Dore have received criticism from other progressives saying, why are you going on Tucker Carlson? What are you doing there? So I would slightly disagree with Axios's characterization here. There are indeed these three Americas. One of them would be blue America. One of them would be slightly red America, old school red America, 2002 conservative America, and then populist America. Populist America being populated by the likes of Tucker Carlson specifically, and then other people who are more left-leaning but are still populist. They still don't trust the government. They still maybe on an emotional level even were sympathetic to the people storming the Capitol. I remember reading comments. It was somebody on the left who was like this. It might have been, I don't want to say names because I'm going to get it wrong, but somebody had said the only thing wrong with the Capitol, the people storming the Capitol, is that it was Trump supporters doing it over election fraud and not progressives doing it over Medicare for all. And they had kind of an attitude of like, man, at least these guys can get stuff done. These Trump people, at least they can like go crazy when they when the government doesn't listen to them. Why is there no fire like that on our side? As opposed to, oh my God, I can't believe they did this. This is the end of America. This is the next 9/11 kind of response that you heard from more establishment-oriented Democrats and Republicans, by the way. Welcome back, Nightmare-o. The problem in the years to come is that unless both conservative Americas reunite, the political system is not going to help them. I'm really glad you brought this up, because this is a pet theory of mine, and it ties directly in with the Three Americas thing. What I would like to see happen, and what I think has a good chance of happening, and this is where some of the optimism comes from today, is I would hope to see, and I can to some extent expect to see, that conservative America splits off and really ceases to exist in its current form. So you have what you might think of as the Lincoln Project Republicans, the Dick Cheney Republicans, the George Bush Republicans, not the ones from Texas who are super nationalist, all right? Those people are going to a different group. I mean the kind of elite neoliberal, neoconservative types would end up as part of, with the establishment Democrats in what let's call the uniparty America, establishment America. Then you would have on the other side of that, the populist America, which would be characterized by leftover Trump people who are still angry at the government, and progressives who are pissed off that the Democrats refuse to give them anything. These would be people who are very angered by the fact that Joe Biden has, to borrow a phrase, frozen out Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren from his cabinet, by the people, for example, who were moving forward with Force the Vote, the Force the Vote campaign, to force Nancy Pelosi to bring Medicare for All to a floor vote. They did not get it. All of the Progressive Caucus members voted for Nancy Pelosi for House Speaker without demanding anything of the kind from her. And so I can imagine that there are some progressives in there who are very pissed off about that. And I would like to see them join forces with the leftover Trump people, reach some compromises on some of their cultural issues, which is not, I think, as hard as it seems, and that would be the group, rather than the reuniting of the establishment and populist conservatives. Kilmar says, because fundamentally individual voters have realized they are increasingly impotent to change anything through the legal channels. Well, we either have to act together in concert, or angry people feel like they have to do something drastic to change the system. And that's why I, Shelmar, like to talk about, togetherness and let's be buddies right now, because there's a lot of people out there who feel like they have no ability to affect policy at all. And they're not just Trump people. They're also progressives. And the more that happens, then the more dangerous this right here becomes, the more dangerous this Three Americas become. Good morning, just stopping by, Public Citizen says. Just saying the two groups you disaggregate are not actually two groups. Traditional red America has been totally co-opted by the far right. Where do we go from here? How do we talk to children about this insurgency? Well, it depends on what your goal is and how you talk to children about the insurgency. If you're trying to get children to join the insurgency, I suppose you talk to them one way. And if you're trying to get them to not join the insurgency, then I would suppose you maybe don't talk to them about it, or talk about it in a different way. But what you're calling the far right, I would call the populist right, and I think that maybe the alliance of the populist left and right would do something to mitigate some of the more bizarre, let's say, antisocial tendencies in the far or populist right. Nightmare says, in a classic FPTP system, two parties of the same type will destroy themselves over time. Yes, or they'll merge together, something like that. It sounds like, Fat Daddy Sambo says, it sounds like that person did not pay attention to the entire summer of riots on the West Coast and Ohio. The left, quote, mostly peacefully protested all summer without significant cost to their cause. The right is not on the same level. Conservatives I know are feeling persecuted at the hands of progressives for the actions of a handful of morons. Well, that's definitely true that conservatives are feeling persecuted, though this is not the beginning of conservatives feeling persecuted. That is indeed something I think has been going on for a while. So, but this does not change the fundamental analysis of this kind of reorganization of American politics that I think has been in the offing for a long time and that is really starting to come to the surface. You get two tectonic plates that push against each other for a long time. Finally, after years and trillions of tons of pressure, you get a massive earthquake and a new mountain range comes and appears out of the ground. And that is, I think, what we're seeing here. It's a reorganization of the political landscape. That part, I think, everybody can agree on. Really, what we're squabbling over here is what the specific contours are, which mountain is going to be where. But I think it's clear. These are pressures. They didn't appear yesterday. Right? This is not, oh, Trump ran for president and all of a sudden everything fell apart. These things were happening long before that. I trace it back to the Bush years, frankly, with the original Patriot Act and the torture programs and the beginning of the endless foreign wars. That's what really started the process, I think. And it got worse. Obama came in, he promised to end the forever wars, and then he was another forever war president. And then Trump came in, also, by the way, promising to end the forever wars. And then he turned out to be a bit of a loose cannon who seems like he had some good intentions, but maybe didn't quite have the personal responsibility and discipline to actually bring those things to fruition. So Shalmar says, you're making the mistake of thinking that the goals of right and left populists are reconcilable. Well, I look at things like I pointed out that there was this guy, Nick Fuentes, who's like he's the most subscribed to guy on DLive. And he is part of, Public Citizen would call him the far right insurrectionists. He was actively cheering the Capitol riots. But he was also saying, the government sucks, where's my $2,000 check? And you saw a lot of the Trump people were on board with the $2,000 check the Democrats loved. This populist right, I think, has a lot of elements of economic liberalism in it. They're not the budget hawk people. They're a different group. They're culturally conservative, but it seems like economically, they have some liberalism to them. And so I think once you talk about specific issues, if you talk about things on an issue-by-issue basis, the populist left and right can work together, especially if they figure out, like I think Public Citizen was saying, without somebody else in their team, the populist conservatives are going nowhere. The regular conservatives, the establishment conservatives, are going nowhere. And so we'll see. The cultural aspect is fundamental to both movements, Shalmar says. Hi, Spiritual Mei Li. Welcome to the stream. Feel free to jump in at any point. The cultural aspect is fundamental. You are outlining my worst nightmare, which is that the two populist movements remain marginalized and remain unable to affect governance at all. Really, because they continue to fight with each other and remain unable to compromise. So on abortion, yes, there's really no negotiation on abortion. We're either going to reach some kind of compromise or people are just going to continue to fight over and over again. That was abortion is one of the hardest issues to talk about because people just dig their heels in. And there's just no talking to them about it. Immigration, I think there might be a little bit of hope. And the reason I think there might be hope on immigration for the populist group is because I look back to Cesar Chavez. Cesar Chavez was the guy who organized the migrant workers in California, right? He's got his own holiday in California now. Big time liberal, right? But he was also a big opponent of immigration. And once upon a time, immigration was thought to hurt the American poor, that bringing in people from outside the country, especially illegally, so no labor laws apply to them, that basically that drives down the wages of lower end of workers at the lower end of the economic spectrum. So ultimately, I think maybe that could prove useful for them to, if they can talk about immigration in that way, instead of making it about this racial thing, which brings me to the last point there, that racial thing, I've been advocating for people to stop talking about things in racial terms because it makes everything more difficult. If you talk about immigration in racial terms, like Ann Coulter did with her book, Adios America, oh my God, we're going to become the Mexican states of America. That's fine if we become the Mexican states of America, right? That's the point of America, is you bring in people from outside. Those people get rich and they get fat and they get lazy, and then you bring in new people. And they get rich and fat and lazy, and America lives happily ever after, just continually bringing in new people from all over the place. Once upon a time, it was the Germanic Americans having to get used to the fact that these dirty, drunken Armenians and Irish people were taking over all the neighborhoods, speaking their native language everywhere. They need to come here and learn American, damn it. Now they're indistinguishable from the rest of the population. I see the same thing happening, really, for Hispanic Americans in general. Spiritual Melee, I don't know what that means. I cannot keep up with all of these comments. Fat Teddy Simbo says, where do I sign up for the rich, fat, and lazy program? I mean, in general, people who come here like illegally, or a lot of people who come here legally as well, are not used to living in a country quite so rich as this one. Indeed, that is why they came here. They feel like they can do better here. And so they're willing to put up with stuff that I think people raised in American culture are not so happy to put up with. And as a result, you know, they tend to rise through the system. Spiritual Melee says, L-O-O-O-O-O-L, it was on the immigration stance. The bone of contention is not the effect of jobs on labor. Both left and right already agree on social welfare. It is the racial and cultural aspect that the two disagree over. Well, that is the case. So we'll just have to see what happens with the racial thing, because frankly, that's the issue that you just, there's no compromising on it. There's no, oh, let's come to the table and discuss. Once you make everything about race, then it becomes, my team wins, hooray, hooray for my side, and then the other team wins, and they're yelling, hooray for my side, and then the argument becomes, my team is better, my team is better, and you've lost the ability to have anything even resembling a discussion. You've lost the ability, and then you can't have free speech, right? That free speech goes out the window, because what do you even need it for at that point? Nightmare O says, this is the last comment I'm going to read before we go back to some articles here. So it's just the continuation of the Monroe Doctrine. America is going to be the prototype of the, quote, all-American state. After the Mexican group, the next biggest groups will be the Northern South Americans, and so on and so on. I'm not sure what precisely you mean by that. The all-American state, you're talking about the United States, like, conquering Mexico and occupying Brazil? I don't know about that one. I'm not seeing a lot of parties pushing for that particular platform. So I only have about 15 minutes left before I have to close this episode up. So I'm going to skip the kind of funny article about Kamala Harris getting mad at Vogue magazine, because that seems a little silly in the context of the very serious and heady conversation we've been having here. So, as it looks like, so here's the other side of this, by the way. Fat Daddy Sambo will no doubt appreciate this one. Public Citizen says, immigration and other cultural assimilation of immigrants is a big issue nobody wants to touch. I touch it. Frankly, it shouldn't be an issue nobody wants to touch. It's like, it seems to me like a great opportunity for people to hold hands and sing Kumbaya, because as it turns out, the way the system works is a pretty cool system, I think. So anyway, Antifa demands Powell's Stop Selling Andy Knows book forces store to close early. So this is, remember, we're talking about the three Americas, right? And these people fall, it's hard to say really where Antifa falls, frankly, because they don't seem to be on the side of the establishment Democrats. They maybe are on the side of the, I don't know, left progressives. I just don't see them making friends anytime soon with really anyone. Republicans want legal immigration, but don't want immigration. Did you mean they don't want illegal immigration? In that case, I wish we could talk about it in that way instead of the racial way, because the racial way makes everything worse. So let me see if I can find the good articles here real quick. This is emotional for me. All right. So we're gonna do a little indulge Patrick here for a moment. This is from the Foundation for Economic Education. Always even-handed folks around here. Facebook has suspended Ron Paul. Ron Paul, I loved Ron Paul. We were talking earlier about Dan Carlin and how he's the kind of guy you can listen to his podcast and not agree with anything he says, but you still love him. Like, you still want to listen to him and talk to him and be like, listen, man, here's why I think differently from you. Ron Paul was that for me. I have a libertarian soul, kind of. Like, just, I think very often you let people do their thing, they're gonna, you know, figure things out for themselves. Ron Paul is a little hardcore. I think maybe, you know, sometimes he favors ideology over reality, but, you know, we're not gonna, like, destroy him over that. But Facebook has blocked him from managing his Facebook platform. Facebook blocked former presidential candidate Ron Paul from his own page. The move came hours after the longtime congressman and libertarian hero shared an article he wrote criticizing Twitter and Facebook for banning President Donald Trump. Now, he's not the only one doing that. The French government and Angela Merkel have also criticized Twitter and Facebook, and the ACLU has criticized Twitter and Facebook for doing this. We're really having, like, to put the Three Americas thing aside for a moment, we are having, like, a moment of collective realization about the amount of power that these social media giants have just in our society in general. And it is a little troubling, regardless of what area on the political spectrum you occupy. Because I know it's hard to imagine right now, but there is a case where you could fast forward a decade or two decades and big tech would be controlled by Republicans or conservatives or some group you don't like. And then if you're a Democrat, if you're a liberal, if you're a leftist, now you're the one being censored. It's the fact that this power exists at all that is the problem, not who happens to be wielding it. The fact that they have the ability to do this is the problem. I tend towards what I call the free market solution, which would be find a way to promote an environment where you have lots of different competing companies, all of which do their own thing. But of course, that means that you can't have people down the stack, to borrow a phrase from the going to talk about it here, from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That's the last piece I want to look at. You can't have companies down the stack that are trying to, like, control dialogue. Public Citizen, I agree very much. The right should have been policing their own. I couldn't stop thinking about Gandhi and how Gandhi, he, like, quit his movement temporarily, and he said, I'm not participating in the movement anymore, because one of the people in the movement, I think they tried to assault some British person who showed up, some colonial administrator who showed up in India. A bunch of Gandhi's supporters were like, we're gonna beat the shit out of you. And Gandhi said, that's it, I'm out. If we can't do it right, I don't want to do it at all. And that's what I kept thinking of with the parlor and the Lynn Wood thing. I'm like, the people, the conservatives need to like look inward a little bit here. Pragmatic rage. Corpos have too much power and the GOP did jack all to fix it. I like that one part right there. The GOP did jack all. That seems to be their MO lately. Spiritual Melly says free market equals private business. Yes, what I mean, Spiritual Melly, is that instead of the government stepping in and legislating, thou shalt do this and thou shalt do that, I would like to see some kind, and I don't exactly know what the contours of this would be, what specifically it would look like, but the idea would be to have at least create an environment where somehow you can have multiple different companies with multiple different kind of moderation practices that allow different kinds of speech on there. So grandma can have hers to talk to her grandkids. The right-wing lunatics can have one to talk to each other. And then you can have like a mainstream one. But we should be clear on this. Because a lot of people go, oh, so you want to just let people just incite violence? No. We already have laws against inciting violence. That's supposed to be the government enforcing that. It's not supposed to be a private entity enforcing that. They don't really have a responsibility or requirement to do that. So if you want to create, okay, let's create an arm of law enforcement whose job is just to trawl social media looking for people inciting violence or posting child porn and get rid of them and track them down. And maybe you could even say, hey, if you want to be on a social media platform, you got to hand over your phone number or something. So that if you do start committing crimes, we can come to your house and arrest you. That to me would be better than the nationalizing Twitter, making Twitter a public utility, like I heard some people say. Nightmare says this is going to build some online ghettos. I'm not sure about, well, those online ghettos already exist. I posted clips from this show on BitChute and the results were not good. So yeah, those ghettos definitely already exist. It's not just, Pragmatic Rage says, Trump supporters, it's not just Trump supporters angry about this. A lot of us left-leaning, non-woke types do like the censorship. Did you mean don't like the censorship? Because if you do like the censorship, then what are you angry about? You should be celebrating the censorship. Okay, you don't. I get it. That makes sense. Now, of course, the other side is fighting back. YouTuber Game says, hey, what's up from Germany? Hello from Germany. I was very happy to see Angela Merkel criticizing Facebook and Twitter for banning people. And she said, going after free speech, I guess. Though I have from my understanding is Germany is not super huge on free speech. They have a pretty low bar for what constitutes dangerous or hateful speech. So it was kind of interesting. And we think it's pretty retarded. Interesting. I don't know if you're dodging the censors there. It's very offensive, YouTuber. Very offensive. You're going to be canceled. It's not a matter of individual criminality, Shelmar says. Entire violent political movements could grow online without committing a crime or being detected. Well, okay, so to be fair, YouTuber Games, in Germany we can say that no problem. Well, I guess there's just, cultural rules are different. But anyway, we are currently discussing, I had posited that the government should really be the ones going after people who are inciting violence online. Oh, aren't you just so impressive, Nightmare, whipping out German. So it's not a matter of individual criminality. Entire violent political movements could grow online without committing a crime or being detected. Well, I suppose that is possible, but if it's a violent political movement, doesn't that mean they're committing crimes? If they're not committing crimes, are they really violent? Unless you're going to go for this, like, a certain kinds of speech are violence, which that's a very dicey kind of argument. So this, to me, is also kind of problematic here. As interesting as it sounds like Northern Idaho is, I don't think this is going to do anything. It seems to me like a little bit of virtue signaling on the order of Stripe and Shopify kicking Trump off of their using their services. Like, Trump's not going to use Shopify to foment an insurrection. So, whatever. Idaho company to block Facebook and Twitter for censorship. So an internet provider based in northern Idaho says it will block Facebook and Twitter from its Wi-Fi service for some customers due to claims of censorship. KRMTV reports the decision by Your T1 Wi-Fi came after Twitter and Facebook banned President Trump from their platforms due to incitement of violence. So there's two sides to this, one of them being, I think this is dumb in and of itself, but it is kind of necessary at the same time, because ultimately this is the sort of thing, if it happens on a larger scale, that would lead to, ideally, in theory, we can hope, fingers crossed, would lead to a more kind of distributed power in this area, where maybe we all come to the table and say, all right, we promise not to censor people for their political stuff. Spiritual Millie says, LOL, Trump tried to ban TikTok and TikTok banned him. That is actually hilarious and ironic. So let's go to the last article I wanted to look at here, because I don't want to talk about the rest of this stuff. And I don't have time to talk about the rest of this stuff because you guys are talking so much. In Austria, free speech is not restricted, Nightmare says, until you call for use of force against either the government or a person. That sounds like a great standard. But doesn't Austria have hate speech laws? Like, if I was to go on out in public and say that, I don't know, gay people are a threat to Austria, and gay, you know, the gay clubs are destroying great Austrian culture, then am I allowed to do that kind of stuff? I was under the impression most European countries had hate speech rules. So feel free to enlighten me. I'm always happy to learn about what's going on in Austria. So this is from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who should be ideally positioned to talk about this subject. Spiritual Melly says, thank you for streaming, by the way. Great to listen to in the morning. Well, isn't that sweet? Someone who comes here and instead of arguing with me just says, thank you. I think we can all learn from Spiritual Melly. But anyway, in the last couple of minutes I've got here, I want to talk about this article from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And it says, beyond platforms, private censorship, Parler, and the Stack. And I don't have time to read the whole thing. But what I can do is scroll down to the interesting part. It's called the Free Speech Stack, aka Free Speech Choke Points. And these guys are big. The people over here at the Electronic Frontier Foundation are big time electronic freedom people. They're defenders of Section 230. They're the people who say you can't get rid of it just because you don't like it politically. They're big time opposed to surveillance. They were the ones who gave me the article about those Ring doorbells are testing out a plan where you would actually be able to upload streams of the cameras mounted on your house directly to local law enforcement at the same time that Ring was rolling out the drone that flies around your house with a camera. So you can now have security drones flying around your house that you can upload the stream directly to local law enforcement. You can in fact volunteer to become part of 1984. So the Free Speech Stack, aka Free Speech Choke Points. To see the implications of censorship choices by deeper stack companies, these are companies like service providers, these are companies like those that prevent against denial of service attacks like Cloudflare. So let's back up for a minute, they say. As researcher Joan Donovan puts it, quote, at every level of the tech stack, corporations are placed in positions to make value judgments regarding the legitimacy of content, including who should have access, when, and how. Nightmare says, sounds great, but do I want my private life streamed live? No, you don't want your private life streamed live. Don't do this. Don't go to the dark side, all right? You don't, like, it's not going to help your Twitter following. It's not going to help you become internet famous to live stream yourself pooping. It just is not a good idea. So to go back to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the decisions made by companies at varying layers of the stack are bound to have different impacts on free expression. And so at the top of the stack, you have Facebook and Twitter. These are the people that are customer facing, basically. And then at the other end of the stack are internet service providers like Comcast or AT&T. Decisions made by companies at this layer of the stack to remove content or users raise greater concerns for free expression, especially when there are few, if any, competitors. That's the big deal. And this is where you start to see conservatives getting real nervous talking about what happens when banks start refusing to do business with conservatives. I don't think that's likely anytime in the near future, depending on your definition of conservative. But like I said, this is leading to a big realization that if you really want independence, you have to like build everything yourself and maybe move to northern Idaho and live completely off the grid. But don't saw off any shotguns for anyone who promises you that they're not an FBI agent, because I promise you they are. So anyway, unfortunately, this brings us to the end of the hour, unfortunately, because I know we have a lot more we'd like to talk about. But we will be back tomorrow at the same time, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, to talk about both conservatives and anyone to the right of Stalin, Pragmatic Rage says. Some people would argue Stalin himself is a right-wing figure. Spiritual Melly, who the fuck lives in Idaho? Apparently some cool people who live off the grid and make all their own power and everything. So on and so forth. Anyway, that brings us to the end. We will be back tomorrow at the same time, 9 a.m., so that you can all get your morning politics and philosophy. So make sure to follow us if you're on Twitch. Subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. You can find our show archive on YouTube, where you can leave comments on other stuff we've talked about. So, yeah. Feel free to do all of those things, and we will see you here tomorrow. And of course, feel free to share this channel with all of your friends and allies like it's the unearned wealth of your ancestors. We will see you all tomorrow. Thank you for watching. This has been another episode of Socratic Citizen.